is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Welcome to Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politics. Reading the comments from his previous interview, there's at least one of you that's disappointed that you can't see his shoes or the shoes I am wearing. However, I'm sure that the rest of you are pleased to see him in any way or angle. He may not be our official of footwear, but we're glad he's our Minister of Interpretation. Please make some noise. Welcome, Botsang Modimo wa me Muilwa. Political extraordinaire.
Thanks. I'm not showing my shoes today. Tato.
Auckland.
Thanks a lot for the intro, and good morning to the followers, the viewers, the supporters, and the subscribers.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Please subscribe, and most importantly, engage in the comments at the bottom. Botsang does go in there to comment.
I actually wanted to say, you know, being old, I thought I'm the only one who's suffering from the subscribe issue. So many people saying, I don't like subscriptions. I don't want to fill forms. So they think when you click there, it's going to open a form that you must fill details. So many people follow, they watch the show, but they don't subscribe.
Okay.
Because they think clicking that subscription, and it's like liking. You just have to click subscribe. And what happens is every week when we are on air on Saturday morning, they will get automatic notifications. That's the benefit of subscribing.
And we're not going to send you spam. We're not going to offer to enlarge any part of your body. You are safe. Just subscribe. Thank you very much. Up Close and Personal Part 2, the response has been amazing.
Very amazing. Very incredible. I've received responses from, some are emotional. You know,
yes.
Some people are saying you are brave. And some are appreciating. You know, there's one comment that somebody said, thanks, Botsang, for what you have done for our country.
Mm-hmm.
And that touched me more than anything else, because
mm-hmm.
I've always said to people, I'm a public servant. I'm here to serve the public and nothing else. But the response has been very amazing, mm-hmm. except from one person. My legal law advisor was very upset with me. That was too soon, and I actually would have messed up my case, employment case. And I'm like, no, this, when it went out, the case was already done at the CCMA.
So are you waiting now?
And I'm just waiting for the outcome. And he thinks that, no, this being in the public space, it may irritate, anger, and or influence the commissioner or the presiding officer. It's not supposed to.
Mm.
The presiding officer is an independent person.
Based on facts.
He must base it on facts.
Yeah.
And again, Fresh, you know, when people were saying, why do I talk about my labor issues in a public space? And I have a response to that.
Yes, sir.
That the perpetrators of the labor violence against employees and destruction of senior public officials in government by politicians and colleagues, when they do it, they don't check coast. They don't ask questions.
Yes.
They just go, you know, roughly towards people and destroys people's lives. So why should we, when we want to react and respond and cry or lament,
we must check coast.
Exercise a strain and
take a bigger part.
Exactly. So if you, I always say, and I've said it last week, if I do not insult people, if I don't offend people, I will tell the truth. If the truth offends, let it be. But I'm looking forward and I'm waiting for the outcome of the CCMA. I should be getting it in the next week or two. And as I've said, I will be returning back to my office. I'm going back to work.
Hey, finally.
I will go back to work.
I've been unemployed for 2.5 years. You've been unemployed for 8 months. We need work.
I need work. I need a bunch of dismissed people teaming up together to set the record straight. I must divorce French guys and go back to work.
No, but sometimes birds of an unemployment feather must flock together.
Yeah, that's the way.
So, first story I want us to touch on. So, Orlando Pirates are playing in a soccer tournament in Spain. One of the teams is from Tel Aviv,
mm-hmm.
Israel.
Yes.
And senior members of the ANC, I think the spokesperson, that group, Gintate Zikalala.
Yes.
Basically saying that Pirates must not play this match, or they must not show up, or they must boycott, whatever that looks like. What are your views on that?
Look, I think the oldies of the ANC, they are overreaching. You know, their mandate, what they are supposed to be sitting and doing there.
Mm.
I think you call them senior, they are calling themselves the
veterans.
The Veterans League.
Yes.
Yeah, and they're anyway senior by age. Mm. I think that is actually absurd for the ANC Veterans League, and whoever is calling for Orlando Pirates, I'm a Kaizer Chiefs fan, but I have to be fair. Who's calling for Orlando Pirates not to go and participate in an international tournament while the ANC itself has relationships with Israel in a form of the ANC being the government, in the party in power and in government in South Africa. And we're maintaining not only diplomatic relations with the state of Israel that is murdering the children of Palestine, that is occupying almost 90% of Palestine, you know, the land. We don't only have diplomatic relations with them, despite the fact that the diplomatic offices in both countries have been reduced to a smaller scale. They still have presence. Mm-hmm. And we also have trade relations with Israel. You know, a lot of food that you consume, particularly from Woolies, they're important from Israel. You know, you will see if you go to Woolies specifically, they are palms, plums and all those things. They're imported from Israel. Mm-hmm. So we still have trade relations with Israel. We still supply Israel with stuff. They still supply us with stuff, and we are maintaining diplomatic relations. And they want to tell an independent private soccer club, which is a business. It's not just an entertaining. It's a business that Ivan Khoza and the others own. And they want to tell them that they should not go and play Tel Aviv in Spain, not even in Israel, you understand? So why do we play in double standards? They're playing double standards. If we want to, you know, cut and severe relations with Israel, we must do it absolutely. And there's been a call since Nelson Mandela time to say South Africa, the people of Palestine are suffering the worse than the way we suffered during apartheid.
In fact, to quote Madiba, I think he said, until the people of Palestine are free, none of us are free.
Absolutely. So the ANC should be focusing on that. The Veterans League should be focusing on that. Let's sit here and wish Orlando Pirates well to perform on this tournament. And they must not go and drag their politics. They have failed politically to address politics with Israel. They can't now want to use sporting or cultural activities with Israel. And then why don't they actually stop Israel people from traveling to South Africa? Don't give them visas. Or introduce visas that will make it costly and difficult for the people of Israel to come to our country. Why don't they do that if they're serious about it? I think they must leave Orlando Pirates to go and play soccer and let the Sea Robbers go and win that game against Tel Aviv. That's how we can punish them.
In fact, surely there's an opportunity for there to be a political statement by Pirates, for instance, if anything then, rather they all walk on with a black armband.
Exactly.
And say, listen, we're wearing this black armband in solidarity with the people of Palestine.
I think a lot of parents can do that. We have seen it in tennis. We have seen the Williams sisters, you know.
Or take a knee for the match.
Or something, like anything that can, you
they
know.
Can, they can still make a statement.
Exactly. You can make a statement.
And still honor the fixture.
Exactly. I think that's what should happen. I think it will be in the right direction and a message would be sent. We have seen the anti-racism protest in Spain itself, especially in Spain and all over Europe, where black players would wear T-shirts or armbands against racism in football. And I think the same message should be sent to Israel regarding this game.
Let's talk about municipalities without managers. We're also finding out that a lot of, especially in rural areas, a lot of councillors can't read or write.
It's a challenge. Look, the Auditor General has found that 80% of municipalities in South Africa are not properly managed. You know, their books are not in order. And when you look at one of the causes of that, it's absence of municipal managers. The positions are not filled. And I'll tell you why. Not because people don't want jobs. I mean, it's a very high-ranking government position. People will apply, and it's paying very well as well. But because of political interference, municipal managers who are supposed to be administrators and independent from political parties are not getting into those positions because politicians, they want to influence them when it comes to contracts or tenders or how to run the administration and the finances of a municipality. Now we find ourselves with over 50% of municipalities not having municipal managers. A municipal manager is like a director general or a CEO of an organization, and imagine it being vacant for many years. And that tells why there's malfunctioning and maladministration in municipalities, because the head of corporate services, the head of finances, and the head of general management in a municipality is not present. And it should be worrying to COCTA why municipalities are not filling municipal measures position. But I've spoken to some few people. Yesterday I had a conversation with the COCTA MEC of Gauteng, who was a personal friend. We're talking personal capacity. And you know, funny enough, that some people are even afraid to take those positions because of the assassinations, the corruption, yes, and the murders that are happening. Mm-hmm. So people are afraid to take those positions, especially in areas like KZN, Mpumalanga, where they are notorious of killing and assassinating municipal officials.
Yeah,
and it's very scary.
Yeah, because if Rao Faga, Rao Kenya, we expect you to reciprocate. And if you don't reciprocate, then it might be trouble.
Absolutely. So
you can't be surprised that some people are afraid to fill those positions.
I will take a municipal position. Any problem, nobody will bribe me and nobody will threaten my life. I will do that.
Mm.
You know, people must just take a stand position. You know, it used to be dangerous to be a soldier or a policeman in South Africa.
Yeah.
Now it's dangerous to be a financial head in this country,
or
government.
Or a councillor.
Or a councillor, for that matter.
What will it take for certain admin positions to be depoliticized?
Look, they're not supposed to be political. And most positions in government, senior positions, you know, when it, like I said before, it used to be from DG and upwards. Mm. Now you go to a level of even a director in government, mm, you know, which is three levels below a director general, because sure, there's a DDG and a chief director.
Mm-hmm.
They are politicized because that's where decisions are made.
That's where the money is.
Yes, that's where comrades wants to eat. But I think it's a matter of professionalism. I think it's a situation whereby the government puts its foot down, mm, and say, we have the political position in mayors and councillors, mm, and let's leave the administration to professionals. Then these municipalities will function properly. For as long as political parties interfere,
mm,
with appointment of municipal managers and administrators, we will not solve this problem, because that's where corruption, that is the root evil of corruption, to can have people to be like that. But the prescription of the Public Service Act,
mm,
does not prescribe that it should have, you know, political interference. It doesn't. It doesn't say people must be politically appointed.
But can't we have it such that we say these positions can never be political appointees?
They are not. They are not political appointees, but it happens by the nature. Look, Fresh.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Saying that we will hire based on a pool of talent that can do the job versus where now you are one of us.
Okay, but look at it this way.
Mm.
The pool of talent may include people who belong to political parties.
Mm.
And that's where the challenge is. Mm. You will find that somebody is a graduate in public administration or in municipal management or municipal finance,
mm,
but he belongs to a political party. They will tell you, it happens with us. They will tell you, apply, put your application. Who's going to sit on the panel? Is the mayor and the councillors from your political party, maybe from another political party as well, who's minority? So the four or five people who makes the panel that interviews the people, they already know who they want.
Yes.
And so it's not foolproof.
It's a formality.
It's a formality.
Yeah.
They already know who they want. And once that person belongs in there, first of all, you get your salary. You get your 2 million annual salary, you know, mm-hmm, and then, but all the tenders and the contracts, you must give them to members of the political party who are sitting outside,
mm-hmm,
the municipality.
Mm-hmm.
And this, how corruption works in government. The people who are sitting there, you are compensated by getting a salary. Yeah, you understand? So that's why you find that when corruption comes out and bigger names are mentioned, who gets the fall? It's normally people in administration and finance.
Mm.
The low-hanging fruits, because they are the ones who facilitated this whole corruption.
Sure.
So your purpose being there is to facilitate corruption.
Mm.
And you are actually not the one who's even benefiting from that whole process. You know, somebody goes and facilitates a tender of 340 million. He's not even earning 1 million. Mm. But the position you occupy,
the power,
so critical. Mm. The power, it's so critical,
mm,
that you can give somebody 340 million unfairly.
Sure.
And you don't even get 1 million of debt, and you get caught and you get fired. Mm. And that's where the challenge is that we are sitting with. The contracts, you know, situation has created a problem. Contracts were there. Part of the things that I had wanted us to talk to is how government has outsourced its services, basic services, constitutional rights.
It's basic accounting.
They've outsourced everything.
Why do you have consultants coming to do auditing and accounting
when you can hire youth who are graduates in as accountants? They are sitting in their room in the streets. You can employ them. You know, one of the things I used to say was, when I joined government in 1993, the white government,
mm-hmm,
everybody at the Department of Foreign Affairs and Information, from the security guard, that security was an employee of the department.
Sure.
With medical aid, with pension,
mm,
job guarantee. The cleaning lady who used to make tea for us was an employee of the state. They were not outsourced. This outsourcing of basic services, it has created unemployment because the companies that the government are using cheap labor. They don't treat their employees decently. If you go to CCMA Fresh, it's a sad state of affairs when you go there. You must see the queues, the number of people who have been unfairly dismissed from their work, and majority of them is the so-called blue-collar workers,
sure,
low-income earners, and who don't understand the legal processes. They're just, and most of them are working for black-owned companies. Majority of them, black-owned companies that are doing business with the state.
Sure.
And you can see where things went wrong. Now, we outsource everything. Even water that you drink from the municipality, it's outsourced. You know, it's not government has outsourced basic electricity, water, everything. They have people doing the job that the government is supposed to do naturally.
Isn't that what former mayor of Joburg, Herman Mashaba, was arguing? That we have so many employees here that we are outsourcing from other companies.
Exactly.
That we could hire ourselves.
Exactly.
And, you know, for instance, something like cleaning or security, where the invoice will say security services, Butsang guards the building every day for 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
Butsang gets paid R5,000. But the invoice for Butsang service is R20,000.
Exactly, exactly. Because somebody must have profit, you understand? They must make profit, the maximization of profit. Instead of the government building or the municipality employing that security guard.
Are they giving you 10?
And give you 10 or give what is prescribed as the minimum salary.
Yes,
you understand? The cleaning, and I'm talking about, and you know, EFF has been pushing this. There's one political party that has been pushing this very well, is the EFF talking about outsourcing labor and those things, that it's not right for the country to do that. We can create employment. Why do we, you know, people must ask themselves, why are we cornered into this tender and outsourcing services? It is for people actually to be corrupt. It's facilitated. There's nothing wrong in government contracts. Government contracts have been there for ages, but it has just become worse that the government does not want to do anything, does not want to employ people who are qualified to work for the government. And as you correctly said, you broke down just now the cost of a security guard who's earning 5,000, but the invoice that comes from the company goes to up to 18,000-20,000. And the government can say, we'll give that security guard 9,000 and as prescribed by the labor laws of this country and agreed with the unions, but this person will have pension. This person will have job security. This person will be treated decently under the labor laws of the country. And I think this is where the unions have failed. But you know, I said to somebody this week, some of the things that betrayed the working class in South Africa is the labor unions. Because the labor unions, historically, they were affiliated with political parties. NAPTU with the PAC, COSATU with its affiliates with the ANC. And the very same people, they sit on tables with politicians, with business people. Now, do you think leaders of unions will negotiate fairly for the workers? I don't think so. I don't believe in labor unions at this age.
They're conflicted.
You understand? And you find people who have never worked, who have never been employees. They've forever been labor union leaders, and they want to represent the interests of the employees.
Sure.
They are conflicted. I don't believe in labor unions. I represent myself in most of my, you know, labor battles. Or else, if it's getting complicated like the one I've just had, I had to outsource the lawyer. And yo, thanks, I've got a friend who's a lawyer who volunteered to say, we will do this for you. I know you don't have money. And then I'll pay him back if I win. You know, that was the nice thing. Yes. If I win the case,
in an event that is...
In an event that, yeah. Mm. But it's a very complex situation. Our labor people and employees in South Africa are not treated fairly. And our labor laws are also not fair in some instances. For example, COSATU went and negotiated and agreed that in the labor law of South Africa, when you are dismissed from employment unfairly and you win your case at the CCMA, for example, the maximum amount you can get under labor law is 12 months salary. Then bye-bye. 12 months minus checks, then bye-bye. And that's the maximum. Most companies, they give 3 to 6 months settlement. Who wants to get 12 months salary? And what do you do with the 12 months salary after? And I think it was unjust. If you were unfairly dismissed from employment, you must be reinstated or you must be paid for the duration of the retainer of your contract. I know they say you can claim civil after. Or even worse, until retirement. I was intending to work until I retire. So if somebody doesn't want me to be at work, then they must pay me until my retirement age. Where am I going to get a new job at age 50-something?
Exactly.
It's a complex, but that's one thing that the country should look at. Our labor laws are not just.
Yeah. So let's keep it's within Gauteng quickly. So Gauteng Premier, Banyaza Lesufi, one of my favorite politicians. Obviously, he's been on this job drive here in Nasispani.
Yeah.
He also has his little army.
The green army.
The Mapanyabany. But now political parties are coming up and saying, but why are you using state resources to campaign for the ANC?
Look.
And because my argument is, if it's within his ambit of responsibilities to create employment where they can or to facilitate, surely he must do it. Unless you're saying no government people must work leading to elections, because that's electioneering. You're damned if you do.
So I think, and we have said before, the mistake that Banyaza did when they started is that one of the flyers was in ANC colors.
Oh, yes.
And that has been corrected moving forward.
Mm.
That was the only mistake. There is nothing wrong in creating jobs, whether they are temporary, whether they are low income, and as people are happy.
Mm.
Those people that, and I don't want to say it's Banyaza. Banyaza is the premier of Gauteng. Obviously, his name will be there.
Mm.
The government of Gauteng, whether it's ANC-led or DA-led, has created jobs, has come, whether it's towards the election or it doesn't matter. If they were doing wrong things before or they failed before, what's wrong in correcting your failures before? Banyaza just became a premier recently. And if he comes, you said he's your favorite, if he comes and realizes that his predecessor didn't do as much, what's wrong with that? That's what we call improvement.
Sure.
And Banyaza is sitting there and saying, there is problems in Gauteng. I'm not a minister of labor, but I'm the premier of this province. I'm going to use anything within my powers, following legal and procedures and processes, to create jobs. People were criticizing them to say it's low income jobs. We were saying it's unskilled. It's okay, but you can skill people at work. You can skill people while they're employed. And I think the Democratic Party or the DA, Democratic Alliance, it's actually unfair to attack Banyaza Lesufi on this, because they've done it in the Cape. They've done it in the Western Cape. They've done it a lot in municipality of Cape Town in different formats.
Sure.
You understand? So there was a stage where the Democratic Alliance was putting toilets all over the squatter camps towards the elections. At some stage, there was an uproar actually when some of those water tanks were even blue. It's a coincidence. No, it's not a coincidence. It's a strategy that, you know, the DA is delivering in the Western Cape where the ANC is failing in Gauteng and other provinces. But we shouldn't fall into the trap of those political games and the people. The people are employed. The people are happy. I would rather earn 6,000 rand than idle on the street and end up taking yaope or doing the wrong things. And thumbs up to Banyaza and his team, because it's not about Banyaza. You know, he's got MMECs. Whether it's the ANC decision, whether it's a government decision, it is a decision in the right direction. And I think he should actually even increase and make more jobs. Let the DA and the opposition try. It's fine. Let them try. But I just hope these jobs are sustainable. And this youth and these people who are employed, they will be able to stay in the beyond 2024 elections. So that's my only concern about it. Should be beyond. You must not come and create a million jobs, and then after 3 years, these jobs have collapsed. There's no budget for that. They must create a sustainable jobs. You know, I think that's more important.
And also upskill these kids and this youth so that they can leave those jobs and go get a better position somewhere else.
One advice I would give to Banyaza, and I've always complained about that, and I've said, white people, with their standard 8 or JCs, whatever you call it these days, they left municipalities with a blueprint of water meters.
Sure.
And they opened companies that are rendering services to municipalities. If my meter outside the street breaks, guess who the municipality called? Former employees who have companies to fix meters.
Yes.
Now, Banyaza should look into that, and the municipalities like Joburg and Tshwane, and upskill people who can do municipal, you know, ambach and what do you call it, a skillful work, so that they can fix taps, they can do those things. Mm. We are having water scarcity problems. I've driven around the streets of Joburg. I've seen water taps leaking all over.
Mm.
Imagine if they can embark on a campaign to say, we're going to take 10 kids from Alexander, 10 from Soweto, 10 from Randfontein and everywhere, they are going to fix water taps that are leaking, or water pipes. You know how much water will we save? According to the report of rainwater, 43% of water losses in Gauteng, in Joburg, are because of leaking taps.
Do you know that on my street this week alone, from Monday until now, the end of the week, there's been a leaking pipe. In fact, you can't drive on the road now because there's literally a ridge exactly. that's been formed by the pressure of this water.
This water, yeah.
But it's been leaking the entire week.
And nobody's doing anything.
And it was reported there is a number. What's the reference?
Reference number, yeah.
Every day that pipe was reported. It took an entire week. And it's high pressure gushing water.
And this happens when Gauteng or Joburg is suffering from water loss. When actually four or five municipalities, Roodepoort, Randfontein, Joburg itself, Midrand, they don't have water this week. Mm. While we are having somewhere taps leaking and water, clean water running around. And that's a challenge.
Let's talk about Deputy President Paul Mashatile. Is he under attack? What on earth is going on?
President Mashatile, or Deputy President Mashatile, is under severe. You know, President Mashatile, Paul is the Zelensky of South Africa. Mm. If they scud missiles from everywhere, and this is where the challenge is. He issued a statement last week. He went public to say he's under attack. Mm. The statement didn't say much. I had expected Paul to stand up and say who is attacking him, because then he should have been smart about it. He should be bold and open. Because once you know, or your supporters know that you are under attack, then they can go and counter that. But Paul is under attack from the opposition parties, particularly the Democratic Alliance. Mm. He is being faced by AfriForum. He's under attack from the media. Mm. You know, they have a concerted effort every day to write something negative about Paul Mashatile. But I do not rule out that Paul is also under attack from his own political party. The ANC, I've said it before, has more than four factions. You know, it's no longer Zuma versus, or the RET versus Ramaphosa and the Tumamwina. No. There's so many branches of the ANC. The president of the republic stood up. I actually wrote on his Twitter to say, but Mr. President, why, what's pushing you from coming to say, I've hired the deputy president, nobody will call you? What pushed? What made President Ramaphosa to go on Twitter and say, I'm not going to fire? What pushed him? Why did he say, well, who did he owe? If there was nothing unbecoming about this campaign to discredit and remove Paul Mashatile, then the president should have never said anything. But again, I think it is within the president. Let me tell you, I'm buying on the story that, you see, the Democratic Alliance and the ANC, for me, they are the center parties, and they are talking the same language. The DA and White Capital are very comfortable with President Ramaphosa being at the helm of government. At the moment, it's benefiting them. It has stabilized. There's no, you know, leftist talk, Africanist talk. It has stabilized what they wanted, and their properties are protected. Now, him being removed for whatever reason, either by his political party or him resigning, because the leftist group is becoming stronger. It's waking up. There's an awakening call within the ANC leftist. People who are saying, but we are a leftist organization by nature, you know, and we are no longer doing what we have done. And White Capital doesn't like that, because the leftist part of the ANC will push more labor issues, will push more the return of the land, they'll push more redistribution of resources and doing business with government. I think Paul Mashatile is more on that group. He has never been a blue-eyed boy of White Capital. And therefore, they wouldn't want him to ascend to that position. And it brings back what? It brings back the talk that he is in good relationship with Julius Malema.
Sure.
I'm one of the people who are buying the story that if they are going to go in a coalition, Julius has rejected the coalition talks. There's a center-right of the DA Action 8. And I don't know why would DA Action 8 and the new party that's formed by the former leader of DA in Gauteng saying they are going into a conference or a meeting to talk on having election together. They were the same thing. Why did they divorce? And if you look on the other side, Julius said he's not going into any coalition to remove the ANC out of power. But Julius will go into coalition with Paul Mashatile with a benefit. Julius doesn't do things for free. He will go. The EFF will actually fight or vote alone, but fight with the Paul Mashatile's ANC than Cyril Ramaphosa's ANC. Julius wants to remove Cyril. It's very clear that the EFF wants Cyril out. But the White Capital, they would rather have Cyril there than Paul Mashatile. That's the fear. And that's why all these attacks come from.
So are you saying that this war against the deputy president is orchestrated?
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's a well-orchestrated, you know, war or battle.
Mm.
And we will get back to why is it happening.
Sure.
It's orchestrated. And you can see, it's the media on white side. White media is on him. And the very same people who were writing negative things about Jacob Zuma in the past. It's the same bunch of people, the same media houses, same media platforms. The second part is the political parties, the opposition.
Sure.
And if the DA is the opposition of the ANC, then ask yourself, why don't they oppose the African National Congress? They are opposing, actually, Paul Mashatile, the person, you understand? So that's a personal vendetta and orchestration of a battle so that Paul Mashatile must not rise to the higher office. All these things that we are hearing about Paul Mashatile at the moment, and they are in the limelight and headline news, they've been in the news before, some back date to even before he was the Treasurer General of the ruling party. They went into his personal life by, you know, even using, or his former girlfriend or partner is becoming a witness to AfriForum, to the DA, to, you know, allegations again. That's becoming personal. They even go to an extent as recent as yesterday that people who belong to the Democratic Alliance, people who are actually journalists or supposed to be journalists, are even now questioning the origin of Paul Mashatile to say he's either from Malawi or Zimbabwe. And you know what is my standpoint is that white people in South Africa are the last people to talk about the origin of a person. Mm-hmm. At least we can sit here and say Paul Mashatile is from Malawi or Zimbabwe. I mean, I don't care. We had a mayor who was having a father coming from somewhere. We all trace our roots somewhere. My paternal parents come from Botswana. Maternal parents come from Lesotho. Mm-hmm. So do you mean that I should not participate in politics of this country? That's absolute nonsense. White people themselves, they are settlers, all of them. They can't trace their roots anywhere in this continent. And they have a nerve today to say the deputy president of the republic, I don't care about the ANC, but the deputy president is not from South Africa. So what? Are they from South Africa? And this is something that we must realize as a nation and defend, not Paul Mashatile. We should not allow a system whereby people to their benefit can start talking about the roots of people, while white people, they don't want us to talk, that they came here with Dromedaris, Reherend, who they grew up. And if we go there, it will open a can of worms that white people will not appreciate. They should be the last people to talk about the origin of people. He's an African, we're an African continent. I don't care, Fresh, where you come from, what you do. You are legally in this country. I'm legally in this country. I'm South African. I'm a taxpayer and all that. If Paul Mashatile has done wrong, we have court and judicial processes in this country. Let him do it. Let him be cleared or be prosecuted and found guilty. The same way as we saw the Palapala dollars coming from the mattress to the sofa, and the president has been cleared now by the public protector. So why, when it suits them, others get away with these things and others get persecuted in the media? I don't think it's a just thing. And I think the ANC as well, that's what I'm saying, he's also under attack from his own political party. Because the ANC hasn't stood up to defend the deputy president. They haven't. And you must ask yourself why. So the fight is also from within.
Jeez. Okay. Let's talk COPE and the deregistration of COPE as a company, but not as a party.
Yes.
Is it as a company, but not as a party, right?
Well,
what is going on?
COPE can't cope. That's it. It has just come out that COPE, it's a private company.
Are they a dying horse that refuses to have the last kick?
I don't think they're a dying horse. They just should have, you know, sorted themselves out and their internal politics out. And it's a battle. You know, I've called for Ntate Lekota to retire. To retire, because he is killing COPE. Remember, his battle started with Mbazima Shilowa.
Yes.
Now he's fighting Willie Madisha. And I feel sorry, you know, COPE leaders or members are going to give Dennis what, Bloom? Yeah, heart attack one day. The man is doing everything under the sun to protect the image of COPE.
What's left of it?
What's left of it, you understand? But it coming out to say it's a registered private company with CIPO or whatever, the company registration, it's a bizarre. Now it has put the IEC into a tight corner.
Mm.
So we have now found out, and I was listening to the former IEC boss, Teritselani, yesterday explaining. And listening to him, I got shocked. The IEC does not have measures to can check and verify whatever these political parties are putting in front of them. They don't do it. We always thought they go and cross check. They don't. They put it in a public space, in a government gazette, in a public newspaper, for interested parties or members of the public to can say, no, fresh is contaminated, or this party is not that, or another political party will come in a post. For example, it happened with the Black First, Land First.
And we know that system is flawed. Because your average person wouldn't care to go to a government gazette.
Exactly. With the BLF, it was the Freedom Front Plus that took the BLF to the electoral commission or the electoral court to say this political party that you have just registered, its constitution says blacks only. And the BLF couldn't contest election. They had to go and amend the constitution to remove blacks only. And what does Freedom Front Plus have to benefit from BLF not wanting white people? So the whole system of the IEC is flawed. You know, that's why we find councillors or MPs with criminal records, because when they submit the list, if you know how it works, you submit the list of your potential MPs or MMCs or whatever to the IEC when you register about towards the election. They don't have a system whereby they cross check and they check the credibility of those people who are coming. So it's a very flawed system, and it's a sad state of affairs for COPE. COPE was playing very big and good. Well, it has good leaders as well, you know, people who are matured politically. They've got young, it's a mixture of young and old. But if COPE dies, it will be a sad state of affairs in South Africa. And they are killing themselves.
In fact, Ntate Madisha was suspended just now, mostly.
Yes, about a month ago.
So what does that mean going forward?
There's no deputy president, because on record he's suspended.
Yes.
But he's still very close with, on the interview yesterday, he was with Dennis Bloom. And then the president of the party that many are rejecting, he's now owning the party as a private entity. What do you do with private company that they got scoped in some form of business? So they must decide whether they go back to the ANC or they're going, I don't know what business will they enter into.
Yeah.
And that helicopter comes from a military background.
Sure.
So maybe they're going to start selling arms to South Africa, or they'll be the agent of arms in the country. But really, and they've got, look at COPE in Gauteng. The speaker of Gauteng comes from COPE. Very matured, elegant politician. And they will lose some of those people to what? I see some of those people, if COPE collapses, I see some of members of COPE actually move into organizations like the Patriotic Alliance. They are very close with the Patriotic Alliance in all areas. But it's a wait and see situation. I wonder what is the IEC going to do? Because if they now come out after the investigation and find that COPE is actually truly a private company, you know, financial entity, whatever, business entity, they must actually deregister it and remove it. And it depends when did this happen as well. The date is very important. If it has happened long ago, it's not a new thing, then actually leaders of COPE may face the electoral court and prosecution.
Let's stay in Parliament. I think it's a big issue. I don't think there's enough big noise being made about it. Menstruation leave, the bill for menstruation leave. Because I know in India, menstruation leave dates back to as early as, I think, 1913.
Yes.
Zambia instituted menstrual leave as far back as 2015 already.
Germany passed that law when they passed the maternity law.
Yes.
Maternity leave.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, that maternity leave law in Germany, it includes the menstruation leave. But, you know, Fresh, growing up with sisters at school, we had, you know, sisters with girls in the class that I've seen, and we are men, we've been involved with women in our lives. I think it's a decision in the right direction. I think it's a very progressive bill that it's been talked about.
In fact, I feel we took too long with it.
When we passed laws that you know, increased the maternity leave for women in the new South Africa, we should have looked into that, because there's always been a problem.
Yes.
And we look at the majority of the people in South Africa are women. The ANC Women's League and the more than 50% of MPs are women in South Africa. And when we look at those women, those are the laws they should have pushed, because it is not only about menstruation and for the employees or the workers not being able to perform their duties. I look at it from a different angle. It will also aid school children at school, because once this bill passes, it can also be linked to the policy on education or the Education Act, whereby if a girl is having painful periods to an extent that they can't perform their school work, then there must be a clause in the education policy that says the school
will package the work for that person to be able to do work while at home instead of being left behind. At the moment, it's very painful that some girls don't go to school and they sit the whole week, let's say your periods last 1 week, and they're losing on education and development. And it's a very painful exercise. And I think this law is long overdue. And I think South Africans, we should rise, especially men, for a change. Let us rise and support a law that will benefit girls or women in this country. I think it's a very progressive bill that needs urgent attention. They shouldn't take time with this. They've changed many laws. We have now had the Electoral Act being changed quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think we should implement this. It's long overdue. It will benefit school children. It will benefit women at the workplace. And I think it will also go to an extent of saying we care about, they are not sick. My mom always said to me, being on people is not being sick, my son. It's just that it's discomfort and it's painful for others.
But for 20, I think a minimum of 20% of women that go on that period, it's so debilitating.
Exactly.
They can't do anything.
They can't do anything. And I think it's just fair that every one of us should support that. I want to see which political party is going to
run with, or oppose it.
Oppose that bill. I know that the business sector are not going to be very happy with it because people will tell you that I can't be paying for I'm losing money, I'm losing income, yes, I'm losing this. But we should not think profit only. Having a uncomfortable person or a sick person at work who can perform, it's actually delaying progress. It's actually not delivering. But if you support your staff and your people, then things will get better with time.
Absolutely. Lord Hayne and the International Anti-Corruption Court. What on earth is that, sir?
First, we must remind South Africans who's Lord Hayne.
Yes.
Lord Hayne, I've just discovered that he was actually born in Nairobi, Kenya.
Mm.
He studied in South Africa, Pretoria High School. And he was the minister. He's a Labour Party member of parliament, and he was a former minister in Ireland. He has come with a concept like the ICC, the International Criminal Court. Mm. But now it is the International Anti-Corruption Court. So it's an IAC that he wants to form. It is the decision in the right direction to say majority of political crimes is not only murders and atrocities of killing people and wars. Mm. There's corruption in the world. And he says, why are we not prosecuting the corrupt heads of states and politicians?
Is this at a UN level?
It's at international level, but what he's doing is, he has approached England, UK, the USA, and South Africa. And again, it's very worrisome that every time these people come with international laws, South Africa will find themselves in the middle of the world. He has approached one of the former constitutional court judges in South Africa to support his move. It was rejected in the UK. The US is rejected it from White House, but they're looking at it at another level. And then this approach is that he's going to approach the United Nations, for the United Nations to recognize this body, this international. And the reason why he's doing that, he's correcting the mistake that the ICC did. The ICC, if you are not a signatory to it, they can't come and prosecute, or they can't force you to do that. So he's avoiding that by approaching the United Nations, that they must recognize this and pass a clause or a treaty that recognizes the anti-corruption court. Why is he doing that? Because majority of states in the world are members of the UN. And once it's a UN treaty, it will be applicable even in countries that are not United Nations members. Understand? So it will be applicable because the UN treaties are applicable across the globe because majority of the can't belong there. So he is coming with us. It's something in the right direction, but who is he targeting? I looked at his interview on SABC sometimes during the week, a full interview. And he mentions, for example, in South Africa, you had Jacob Zuma, who was corrupt, and the Guptas who ran away from the country and they can't be prosecuted at the moment. You can see once you start mentioning and targeting certain individuals, and that's where the problem becomes, because it's clear that they realize that the International Criminal Court can't prosecute these people. So they are forming another wing to say, let's go and prosecute corrupt people or corrupt heads of state. They must start with the American leaders. They're the most corrupt leaders on earth. He must start with the UK. He's from Ireland. The UK had persecuted the Irish people for so many years. They still even own. That's why it's called the United Kingdom, because it includes
Ireland, you know, in that. He must start there. So I think South Africa must not rush. But look, the ANC is clever now. South Africans are awake because of these treaties we have signed, excited in the past. But I think what South Africa must do, they must not get excited, not anymore, in signing any international treaties. We are failing to prosecute people and to handle our own, you know, corruption in the country. We have the Zondo Commission, we have the NPA failing to prosecute people. Let us focus on building our prosecuting process in the country, then rush to sign another international treaty. But it's at very infancy stages. It's not yet in advanced stages, but it is being sneaked out. You know, they are quiet about it. The media is not reporting much about it. If I didn't see that in the SABC, I would have known about the story, in a sense. So the media is not writing anything about this. The next thing we will hear, we'll be told that that bill is there and we must comment. And we know when it comes to commenting on the bill, South Africans don't do that. Very few people do that.
Trucks are burning around the country. And, you know, you might or might not know that trucks, also the absence of rail lately, is how we move goods literally across the subcontinent. But trucks are being stopped, burnt, torched. Some are calling it economic sabotage. How do you see,
you know,
this truck stuffy?
I feel like I'm in my office. That has been my work for the last 13 years. I had a CEO who used to say, everything moves on the road, including newborn babies.
Yes.
They move on the road. Including aeroplane parts, they are moved by trucks.
Sure.
So land transport moves everything. And this being called economic sabotage, I was looking at the Minister of Police and the Minister of Transport talking about this. Of course, it is an economic sabotage, but who is sabotaging who? And are we sabotaging the economy of the country or the business of the truck owners? And that's one thing that people have to look into. I'm at the moment not aligned to any government department or whatsoever. So I'm at liberty to can speak about some of these things without compromising my former employer and so forth, and my future employer as well. I happen to have been one of the people who were part of that ministerial task team. Because this thing of trucks being, it didn't start now.
Sure.
It happened 2018, 2019. We stopped it. We stopped it and it resurfaced again. People can go up, down, scream. If we don't go to the root cause of this whole thing, we'll never stop this. It is not just a sabotage of people saying we don't want foreign truck drivers. I saw an interview on one of the media channels, you know, Newsroom Africa. A black guy owns 20 trucks. And this guy, they burned two of his trucks. And he says all his employees are South Africans. So the story and the myth that it's because of foreign drivers, it is not correct. They are focused on the wrong direction. But I think where I'm sitting and having been part of that whole process, this whole thing, it's a labor issue. It's a labor. The drivers with their unions are fighting with the truck owners for employment conditions, which includes those cameras on deck.
Or the dash cam.
The dash cam.
Yeah.
Unions don't want that.
In fact, one of the dash cams captured
one of the guys who tortured the truck.
One of the guys who torched the truck.
I actually think the truck owners are having an advantage at the moment because they can go to the union and say, look now what this cam could have done. But this cam, dash cams, it was not only to interfere with the private life of the driver. That's not why do you want private life when you are in the middle of, you are at work, your truck, it's your office. So what private life is that? But it also works as a tracking device. It also works for security.
Yes.
You know, and that's one element. But the main element with this is the salary of truck owners. I can tell you that what happens is truck owners, they go and they employ people who don't care how much they get, as long as they get a minimum salary or little salary, and then against the agreed wages with the unions. And that's where the problem is. And that's not all. Also, some of these truck owners, I've got a friend who owned a truck and was saving South African breweries. And what happens is once they lose on business, nobody cares for them. They have to go and pay their own employees, and also people lose jobs. But again, I think the trucking industry, the Road Freight Association, they are saying police must guard trucks. It's impossible. Police can be everywhere. And this thing is well orchestrated, I must say. So they do it at a certain place. When police go there, you know, they're called hotspots. Then they move to another place. They should actually go and sit with employees
who have been betrayed by unions, engage them. If we don't engage these people, tell them of let's meet next month. No. They must tackle this thing because it's going to impact very badly. The rail network
it's a moving target. They must
it's
move
a moving
it.
Target. They must move with it. Yes. Engage these employees. Mm. Let me tell you, in one of the engagements I've had with truckers and Home Affairs, one company had said they've got 93 employees. And four of their drivers were South Africans. Out of 93, four. This guy was very proud to sit there and say, how many? It was not me who asked the question. It was a Home Affairs official. How many people? And you know what that guy said? Yeah, but they all have work permits. You see where the problem is? They all have work permits. So these trucking companies, they employ people. They have work permits. And that's where the problem is. The problem is they've got valid work permits. So who's the creator of problems? It's government.
It's
not the trucking companies. We facilitate a problem. And that's what we must be dealing with. Mm. You look at rail. I mean, government has been working for so many years, wrote a lot of blue papers, passed a lot of, you know, acts and bills to say we must move goods, heavy goods that are damaging infrastructure out of our road network to rail. Let me tell you, rail is cheaper, faster, and safer. Once a train leaves a certain spot to another spot, it's cheaper, faster, and safer for those goods to move. Unfortunately, the rail network in SADC has been destroyed. So our rail network can move up to the borders. You know, like if you want to transport things by rail to Mozambique, the rail network ends at Lebombo border post.
Sure.
And the train must come, they load on trucks. But then, again, something that I'm going to give to the minister and the politicians, people have been saying, Nyaope boys or people are sabotaging the country by stealing the Transnet rail network. So people steal 1 meter of spoor, you know, the metal rail line.
The track, yes.
And I asked somebody even yesterday, why do you call it a Transnet sabotage? If this is a sabotage of rail network, Transnet trains or locomotives, they use the same rail line as passenger train. Now, if Nyaope boys and recycling people who are taking things for scrapyard, they wanted scrap metal, they wouldn't only target and steal scrap metal that uses by goods train. They will also steal. We have rail networks all over the townships, all over the world. Why don't they steal that one? So think and apply your mind properly. And don't ask me this question.
It's targeted.
Why is the rail network that's been stolen only the rail network of Transnet, or where Transnet locomotives move, not passenger? Because if I want to steal 1 meter of a metal
or a rail track.
I will steal it anywhere. I will not steal where goods train move. Actually, it's easier for people who are doing a weighing of metal, recycling and all that, and scrapyards. It's easier for them to steal the passenger rails because they're in the townships, they're in some rural areas and in isolated areas. No. The target is Transnet. And coincidentally, this past week, Minister Pravin Gordhan fired the chairperson of Transnet, Popo Molefe. We don't know why, but I've applied my mind and I've said, who tends to benefit when Transnet collapses?
The trucks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have seen police finding trucks with rail networks at spurs or rail tracks leaving the country. You understand? And people are saying Zimbabweans are stealing rail tracks to go and build rail network in Zimbabwe. That's utter nonsense. I don't think that's
absurd.
The case.
It's absurd.
You understand? Yeah. But it's a very serious economic sabotage. I think the government and politicians and people who are sitting in this task team, they must look at how this whole thing is interlinked. The collapse of Transnet, the banning of trucks, who is fighting, who's benefiting and who's losing into this whole thing. The country and the economy will suffer. People will lose jobs. And that's why I agree with you when you say it's a moving target and they must move with it. But it needs very sharp, clear minds. And I don't know what is our intelligence doing. You can sit and apply their mind to say, but what is going on here?
Sure.
You see the police and the soldiers, you bring them to prevent and protect something, not when the fire is already on. Bring them now. We're supposed to curb this thing before trucks start burning.
Be proactive.
We should have been proactive, but we delayed in this whole thing. I was saying to one of my ministers yesterday, who's a friend, to say, you know, I'm sitting outside and I look at Minister Chikung of Transport and I actually feel sorry for her. It's a woman who's been sabotaged into this whole process. She's new in the portfolio. She has been in transport as a deputy minister for many years. She knows what's going on. But, yo,
hell is breaking loose. And while Bekitele was still dealing with the Deep Sloot and Nandipama Magudumana case and the killings in KwaZulu-Natal, now he must start dealing with issues. Our police are stretched, but our transport sector, it really needs sharp, fast minds to can solve this problem.
Is it a runaway train? Or can it be salvaged?
Well, I think it can be salvaged.
Okay.
Yeah.
On that note, Botsang, I know I need to release you because if I don't stop you talking, you're going to be late for your next appointment. So I'm going to need to stop you talking. But thank you so much, as always, for your insight.
Thank you.
Do we buy your book? Where do we support you?
Oh, and by the way, thanks to this platform and viewers and followers, the book sales have gone up. Seriously up. My daughter said, Botsang, sell that book now. It cost you your job. You must start buying bread. So the book sales 082-485-9100. Just send a WhatsApp there from all over the country. And there's good news. The people in Cape Town, the books are there, so they don't have to pay for shipping.
Yes.
So they can also email me on botsangm@gmail.com. But thank you very much, Fresh. Thanks for the platform, and subscribe to the viewers and the followers. Thank you very much, brother.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, hohos and aunts, Botsang Mwilwa is about to leave the building. We are live from Amped Studios, downtown Josie. Thank you for being our home. Shout out to the Africa Podcast Network, Pezulu West for the cinematography, our audio imaging specialist, Otis The Flow Fraser, our guest, Botsang Mwilwa, creative director, Kuvesh Mohan, and show producer, Keletso Modisakeng. Feel free to email us with suggestions, whatever it is on your mind, at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. But most importantly, please hit subscribe and comment down below. What do you like? What do you not like? And do you agree or disagree with all that we talk about? Till next week, have a great week in spite of yourselves.